This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Washington, D.C. Here's Lynn, Murray, and Solly.
Trojan War with Jennifer Love Hewitt and Will Friedle from Boy Meets World made $309. Jags guy, let us know, Solly.
Nice.
It was actually a good movie. It's number 14 on this list. A gentleman who certainly is worth more than $309 is our next guest joining us on the Quicken Loans guest hotline. That is Jeff Goodman, brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, underst mortgage confidently. Jeff, you've moved on to bigger and better things. You're now with Stadium. You've got a podcast out there, the first one, Good and Plenty Pod. You had Doug Gottlieb on the show. So give us the skinny on your new endeavor covering college basketball.
So I'm not allowed to talk really about the new deal with Stadium.
Okay.
But I do start in a couple months here. Last day at ESPN was last week, so it's kind of weird for me. I've been on the draft coverage the last 4 years, and I'll be watching it tomorrow night from my couch because I tore my knee up like a complete idiot diving for a ball playing softball.
Well, you
so
at least didn't
learned,
get into...
I'm too old to dive, I guess, anymore. I can't play like I was in my 20s, and... the only good thing is if there's a time of year when this probably was best to happen, it's probably now, only for work reasons. But, man, it's nice out in Boston. I'd like to be able to walk around and do a little bit more than I'm able to do right now.
You know, it's funny. I wanted to get you on and talk to you about it. It was a long time ago, but I remember sitting on my couch, and you mentioned, messing up your knee, and thank goodness your knee was good and ready to go during the PK-80. What was that experience like for you? Because people watching in, I mean, you were sweating. You were running between two arenas. That had to have been a pretty unique experience.
Yeah, there were a lot of really, really cool things that I did at ESPN. That was certainly one of them, going back and forth between the two games and kind of sprinting and trying to make it. And I think I made it in 60 seconds, and you had to run outside and in and get rehooked up and all that. There's certainly some things I'll miss, no doubt about that. I mean, again, tomorrow night will be one of them, watching the draft and not being a part of it. It was a rush, and it was something that I never thought I'd do in a million years, be a part of the NBA draft TV coverage. I grew up as a writer. That's what I always was, and that's what I still kind of am. And I want to get back to my writing roots a little bit and be able to write certainly more than I was over the last few years and use the TV experience that I got, because I really had none going into ESPN and be able to do a little bit of everything now and enjoy myself.
Well, if you're not following Jeff on Twitter, which I'm sure many of you are already, but do so at Goodman Hoops. And I imagine, Jeff, you'll give us more details on the situation at Stadium here in the coming months via your Twitter page. And new podcast is out on the NBA Draft Good and Plenty Pod, and he had Doug Gottlieb on breaking down the NBA draft. And let's get into the NBA draft, which is tomorrow night, and it seems like it is DeAndre Ayton, pretty consensus there at number one.
Yeah.
What stands out the most about DeAndre? I mean, he's a freakish body. He's got great athleticism. Why are we so convinced he needs to go number one tomorrow night?
Well, the thing that stands out to me the most, because I've seen him play now for 3 or 4 years, is how much harder he plays than when I first saw him. And even as recently as a year or so ago, I remember sitting down with him in October when I asked him who he compared his game to, and he said Kevin Garnett, and I kind of chuckled underneath my breath. I'm like, dude, if you only knew how hard Kevin Garnett went after it on and off the court. And Ayton wasn't that. He was a guy who played hard when he wanted. But this past year at Arizona, and I don't know who to credit. I assume Sean Miller. You got to give him a lot of the credit because how tough he is on guys. DeAndre Ayton showed up every game. He didn't have many of those stinkers where he didn't come out and play hard no matter what the level of competition. So that was the biggest thing to go along with, obviously, 7-1, 260. He can run the court as well as a guard. He's really... Again, he's got a package as a 7-1 guy that you just don't see very often. Can he become Joel Embiid or Anthony Davis in the offensive end? I don't know if he's quite that skilled from the perimeter, but what he is super athletic, strong, kind of got that David Robinson type body, but again, a little more skilled than Robinson away from the basket.
You know, it's funny, Jeff, when you watch the NBA Finals and just watch the NBA postseason, you know, everyone talks about how the big man is becoming extinct, and you look at what the Golden State Warriors have done with their starting five with Andre Iguodala and Draymond Green and kind of going away from the big. Granted, they used JaVale McGee pretty well in the NBA Finals. So how do you think he translates to the NBA game? He is certainly athletic, only attempted 35 threes this year. Can his shooting improve? Can he, you know, when, I mean, the NBA now is all about the switch. Can he get switched onto, yep, into a guard and hold his own?
He can. And shooting is the area where most NBA guys, if you talk to, they feel like as long as you work, and that's the key, right? I mean, we talk about Ben Simmons right now and how the one thing he can't do is shoot the ball. He doesn't even try. Will he be willing to put in the work to become an elite player in the NBA? He's going to be an all-star. I mean, he is. But can he be one of those top three, five players in the NBA? And I think, you know, again, the NBA people will tell you it's the easiest. Like you remember the name Darrell Wright?
Mm-hmm.
Remember Darrell Wright? He played in the league for 10 years or so. I remember seeing him in high school, and he was an atrocious perimeter shooter. He was a freak athlete, terrible perimeter shooter. He ended up leading the NBA in three-point percentage 1 year. Again, because he worked at it. So that is the area you can improve the easiest with repetition.
Talking to Jeff Goodman at Goodman Hoops. Follow him on Twitter, and he'll give you a little bit more information in the coming months with his new endeavor with Stadium. He's got a podcast out there, Good and Plenty, previewing the NBA draft. Doug Gottlieb is his first guest. And, you know, I know, Jeff, you spent all season long covering college basketball, and you cover these guys, you know, in high school as the recruiting process is going on. So when you get a Euro guy like Luka Doncic thrown in there, how much do you know about him? Because he seems very intriguing. He's 6'8". He played in the second best league in the world. He was the MVP of the EuroLeague. So it seems like he's got a lot of positives working for him, but it also feels like there's that hesitancy from a lot of people in the States saying, yeah, but he played in Europe. So what do you know about Luka Doncic, and how high are you on him?
I mean, a lot. I remember Bill Duffy, who ultimately signed him and kind of had him done, telling me about him like 2 years ago. That he was going to be the number one player in this draft, clearly. And he invited me out to watch him work out. I couldn't at that time. I think he was over here maybe a year ago. Might have been two summers ago that he asked me to come out there. But this is a kid who's been on the radar for a long, long time because of his maturity, because of his productiveness in Europe at a young age. So, you know, he's got the size. He's got the ability to really pass the ball. High, high, high basketball IQ. He shoots it well, not a super athlete. I don't think he was ever really in the equation for the number one pick at the end of the day, even though Phoenix's new coach coached him overseas. I think that kind of had some people scrambling to think that, well, maybe they'll take him. But if you're Ryan McDonough, the GM of the Suns, you can't pass up on DeAndre Ayton, because really if you do and it becomes what some people think he may be, that's one of those that you get made fun of forever.
Jeff, Marvin Bagley, if you watch Duke during the year, I mean, he puts up incredible numbers. I mean, I think he'll go into the NBA and put up great offensive numbers, but the question is about his defense. He could go number two to Sacramento. He could drop to number four to Memphis, but he's going to go, you know, top five tomorrow night. He's got a lot of positives working for him. How high are you on Marvin Bagley as a potential pro, and how worried are you about the liability that he could be on the defensive side of the ball?
Yeah, I mean, he is a liability on the defensive side. There's no other way of saying it. He wasn't very good this year, but Duke wasn't very good either. I think Bagley's a guy that you know what you're going to get for the most part. You know, I think he's going to put up, you know, 16-8. I think that's going to be what he does consistently in the NBA. The question is, are we going to care if he's in Sacramento? If he gets drafted second, does it matter? Does anybody know what type of numbers Buddy Hield put up this past year at Sacramento? Most people outside of Sacramento would have no idea. And that's a problem. Will he be on a relevant team? Ultimately, it's funny because if they take him, Sacramento, he's a little bit similar to like Harry Giles. Now, Harry Giles coming off, obviously, a couple major knee injuries. And I don't know if he'll ever get back to what he was, but they're similar, like, body builds, what they do around the basket. So it'll be interesting to see if they take Marvin Bagley tonight, the Kings do, tomorrow night. Because, you know, again, he's a guy who might not have as high upside as, like, Jaren Jackson. But you know what you're going to get from him.
Of the three point guards, Shai Gilgeous, Alexander, easy for me to say, Trae Young, and then Colin Sexton, which of the three do you like the most heading into the NBA?
Boy, man, they're so different. They're all in that same draft range, I think. I mean, you could see any one of them going off the board first. I think Trae Young for me. Sexton scares me because I don't think he's a point guard at all. I think he's just a scorer. So I question his decision-making. Trae Young can do what? He can shoot the heck out of the ball, and he's got great court vision. Is he strong enough now? No. Was there any thought that he would enter the league after a year? No. But he had to go. He's not quite ready physically. It's going to be unfair to judge him in the first couple of years, I think, in the NBA. But second contract, I think, when he bulks up and learns he's got to defend some, he's never going to be a great defender. But listen, Steph was a terrible defender when he came in the league. Now he's probably above average. And that's all Trae Young's got to be on that end of the floor is give effort. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is intriguing. He's long. He can guard. He's got better size than both those guys. But he doesn't shoot it well. And Sexton's a streaky shooter, too. So I would go Young, number one. But I'm not sure any of those guys are going to be starting point guards on playoff teams. Like, if you ask me right now who I'd rather have down the road, those three or Terry Rozier, I'm taking, like, Terry Rozier. And it's easy to say coming off the Celtics playoffs. But, like, Terry Rozier going into the year, everybody, including myself, thought he could be a starting point guard for a non-playoff team. And I think he proved, obviously, with what he was able to do to take the Celtics team deep into the playoffs, a game away from the NBA Finals, he can be a starting point guard for a playoff team. And I'm not sure any of those three guys will be that at the end of the day.
Jeff, before we let you run, as we chat with Jeff Goodman at Goodman Hoops on Twitter, Michael Porter Jr. might be the most intriguing prospect because of the uncertainty when it comes to his injury situation. He was the number one player in the country. Everyone knew the name, and now here he is dealing with a whole lot of injuries. So how worried would you be if your favorite team selected Michael Porter Jr. tomorrow night?
You would think that if they select him, they're going to feel pretty comfortable about the medical information they get from their doctors, but it varies. You know, some GMs are told by their medical people about the same player that, hey, you know what, we feel comfortable about you taking him and he'll be okay. And then another team will get it from their guy. And you know what, I'd stay away from him because I'm worried about his long-term health and re-injuring, you know, his back or whatever it is. I love Porter. I think he's the second most talented player in this draft. And I think he fits the climate of today's NBA better than any other player in this draft. He's a 6'10", versatile forward who can rise up. He's smooth. He can shoot the hell out of the ball. But again, you got to worry a little bit, again, when an 18-year-old has, you know, major back problems and has back surgery. But, man, this is a kid that if he's healthy, I think he can be a star in this league.
Jeff, appreciate the insight. Best of luck with the new endeavor, and we look forward to seeing you at Stadium here in the coming months.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate you having me. Take care.
There he is on Twitter, at Goodman Hoops, the podcast that he's got out, Good in Plenty. And check that out if you want a little bit more insight on the NBA draft. Appreciate Jeff Goodman coming on the show to break down the NBA draft. When we come back, we'll wrap things up. Random Morning Jukebox. That's what we do to close every show on SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.